This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. A Hamilton County grand jury has indicted former University of Cincinnati police officer Ray Tensing for murder and the shooting death of Sam DeBose in a July 19th traffic stop. Hamilton County Prosecutor Joe Dieters has called the shooting asinine and senseless. And we look at the events leading up to the indictment, we get an update and explore the possible effects the case may have on policing, both locally and nationally. Joining us during today's show, Hamilton County Prosecutor Joe Dieters, Cincinnati City Councilmember Wendell Young, and WVXU reporters Tana Weingartner and Bill Reinhardt. You can join the conversation at 513-419-7100. Email talk at WVXU.org or find us on Facebook or Twitter. And we start off with Prosecutor Joe Dieters. Joe, thanks for joining us this afternoon.
Happy to be here.
Joe, after seeing this video of the encounter between Ray Tensing and Sam DeBose, it starts off as just a routine traffic stop. It ends in such a gut-wrenching and horrible way. In all your years as a prosecutor, have you ever seen anything like this before?
No, and yesterday when I released it, I was asked by the reporters what was my first reaction to it, and I said that I can't say this on TV because I was, it's horrific, and I was just stunned, and my immediate reaction was twofold. First of all, someone's life was taken just senselessly. But secondly, I've lived in this city my whole life, and there's no place I love more than Cincinnati. And I realized what that meant after all the work that's gone on since 2001 for some, basically a public official or cop, to act in this fashion and how easily those bonds could be torn down. And it just made me sick to my stomach.
So you think this has done a lot of damage to all the progress that we've made since 2001?
Well, I think it could have. I think the way Cincinnati police responded, their homicide unit responded, the speed of which we dealt with the situation in terms of an indictment, I think that went a long way to calm everybody down. But had I released that video before an indictment, it would have been problematic. I'm convinced of that.
Now, if you watch the video, there's no doubt this is a serious shooting incident. What makes this rise to the level of murder as opposed to, say, manslaughter?
Well, you know, many states have different statutes as they pertain to any homicide. And in Ohio, there's different standards, and it's based on intent. But in Ohio, if you purposely kill another human being, and I'm not going to reveal all my evidence right now on your show, but if you purposely kill another human being, that is murder, period. We also charge him with voluntary homicide because it's a lesser included offense. It basically says in a fit of passion or rage, you purposely kill somebody. It's like
okay, Joe's on his cell phone and we're having some problems. We have lost him. So we'll try to reestablish contact with Joe Dieters. Meantime, Tana Weingartner joins me in the studio. Hi, Tana. You were actually at the arraignment this morning.
That's correct,
For Ray Tensing. Mm-hmm. What happened at the arraignment today?
Well, it was a very full courtroom. There were family members for both Ray Tensing and for Sam DeBose. His family members were there as well. And it was very brief. He was brought in. The judge said, "Do you understand the charges against you?" He said, "Yes, Your Honor." Those were the only words I do believe that he spoke. He was it was a jarring image. Here's a person you're used to seeing in a police uniform. He came in the jail stripes, hands cuffed behind his back. And his attorney entered a plea of not guilty. And then, they asked, obviously, for a low bond or, you know, preferably no bond. The state then or the prosecutor's office, you know, asked for $1 million bond, which they say is typical in murder cases, murder charges. And that is what the judge granted, $1 million bond, called an anyway bond, which means he needed to basically produce 10% or put up collateral. So, it's possible, probable that, you know, his family can do that. So they're and then that was about it. That when the judge said the $10 million bond, some people in the courtroom, clapped at that. And she quickly said, this is a courtroom. You'll maintain yourselves. And that was about the end of it. They set the next date for August 19th and it was over.
So what do you think of what Tensing's attorney had to say? I mean, afterward, what was his reaction?
He was very brief. He just said that his client is very depressed and he still maintains that he was scared for his life and that he acted appropriately.
Okay. Joe Dieters is rejoining us now by cell phone. And Joe, glad to have you back. We were talking about why this rises to the level of murder as opposed to manslaughter. Tensing now claims he was dragged by the car and he was in fear of his life. But you say that the video doesn't show that version.
Does not at all, no. I think he used that as an excuse after he realized what he did. He was not dragged. He fell backwards after he shot Mr. DeBose in the head. Mr. DeBose fell forward in the car and probably his foot hit the accelerator and drove away. But if you look at the tape, he's barely rolling before he gets shot. I mean, barely rolling. And then he's shot in the head. And there could be no more foreseeable result than the death of him when you take a weapon like that and blow a bullet through his head. There's no other foreseeable result.
Now, Tensing pleaded not guilty in court this morning. So do you see any possibility of a plea agreement in this case?
No.
You're pretty adamant about that.
Yeah, obviously the family is going to have a lot to say about it, but I think in fairness to the community and for justice, that he needs to be treated like anyone else who purposely kills someone. He's a police officer, and I work with police every day. 99.9% are wonderful people and do a great job. But, you know, in every line of work, you have people that aren't. And whether it's police or prosecutors or cooks or radio talk show hosts, you're going to have bad people in there. And that's not the measure, by the way, of a police department because someone's bad there. The measure of the police department is how you react when you discover this. And they've reacted very well.
Now, Joe, is it possible that any other officers, any other UC officers are going to be charged in this?
We talked to the family about that yesterday, and we're looking at it. The incident report, they were upset about the incident report because one of the other officers said he was dragged. He may have been saying what Officer Tensing said. We just have to check it out. And I promised them we would check it out. Our goal was to target the shooter first, and that's what we did yesterday.
Now, you called this the most asinine, senseless act you've ever seen a police officer commit. And you called the traffic stop, it was a chicken crap traffic stop. Are you having any regrets at this point about the strong choice of words?
Well, I was going to use a different word, but I decided for purpose of public consumption, I would use crap instead of people. Everybody here has covered me in the media know that I say what I think. I believe nonsense.
Okay, we're unfortunately having problems staying connected with Joe Dieters. We'll try to reconnect with him. Meantime, Tana, this morning's...
I think I could just kind of jump in. I think what he was saying there at the end is that anybody that knows him knows that he generally doesn't sort of mince words and is always...
I've heard him say things were heinous, horrible. He's used all kinds of descriptions in press releases that aren't surprising. Were you surprised by his choice of language in this one, though, Tana? Not really.
Well, no, I like I said, I don't think he minces words usually, and he says kind of what he feels, although, you know, he did say I would have used stronger language if I could.
Now, is Tensing's attorney and Tensing himself, are they still sticking with this story that I was dragged, I was in fear of my life, I was shooting in self-defense? Is that still the angle that they're taking with
that
this?
That is, yes, correct. That is what his attorney said after the arraignment this morning. Mm-hmm.
And also at the arraignment this morning, he said Tensing was depressed.
Yeah, he said very depressed.
They talk about how Tensing's doing in the jail setting.
He was asked about that. He said, frankly, they didn't really discuss it a whole lot. But, you know, he said not good were his words. He said it wasn't good, you know, how it went overnight in the jail.
513-419-7100. If you'd like to join our conversation. So Tensing, at this point, he has not made bail, as far as we know. He hasn't been able to post it.
To my knowledge, when I walked in here 15 minutes ago, he had not. So I cannot confirm that, although the general thought, I guess, out there is that he'll likely be able to do so. But whether he has or not, I cannot confirm.
Bill, you were covering the demonstrations last night. Is that correct?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
We were there.
How many were going on last night? What all was taking place exactly?
Well, through the day, of course, if you may remember, the University of Cincinnati decided they would close their doors at 11 in an abundance of caution. No one was quite sure what was going to be happening yesterday. We knew there was going to be an announcement about the grand jury's decision. Some people were afraid. Some people thought that there would be no indictment, that the charges would not materialize, and that that could lead to civil unrest, rioting up at the campus. So around 11 o'clock, they closed the campus. They told everyone, go home. At that point, there was a large police presence on campus and up around Clifton. If you saw Twitter at all, you saw pictures of state troopers, a convoy of state troopers. The Ohio State Highway Patrol's Special Response Team armored car was on campus. Barricades were set up. Businesses started to close. There was one report that officers were going door to door among student housing off campus, telling them to leave the area in advance of the worst. Well, through the day, it was all quiet up there. We never heard any reports of any problems. Not long after the university closed, the group Black Lives Matter announced on their Facebook post that no matter what decision the grand jury came to, they would stage a demonstration outside the steps, on the steps of the Hamilton County Courthouse at 6:30. So all was quiet until 6:30. I got over there, and just before 6:30, the skies opened up, and everyone got drenched. When I got there, there was maybe a dozen people protesting and probably two dozen reporters, all standing in the rain. And at this point, it seemed like once the indictment had been unsealed, that a lot of the tension had gone out of the city, that there was not going to be fears that people were, there were no fears, there were fewer fears that people were going to be upset and act out. And so it seemed at that point, well, yeah, we've passed the danger zone. Everything's going to be calm and quiet. But still, there was a demonstration. And as the rain continued to fall, the demonstration grew and grew and grew. At one point, I was standing there and I turned around. It's, where did all these people come from? There were suddenly 200 or 300 people standing behind
but
me.
But everybody's still behaving themselves. I mean, it's still a peaceful demonstration.
It was a very peaceful demonstration. There was almost two demonstrations, actually. There was two different bullhorns, and at times they seemed to be at odds with each other over how to proceed. But the Black Lives Matter group, it was their demonstration, and they kind of took the lead. The fellow with the other megaphone kept trying to start the chant, "All Lives Matter." and that never really caught on, but they had their following. And eventually, through the evening, after a number of speeches by friends and family of Sam, they left the courthouse, marched over to District 1 headquarters, which is kind of odd because the whole incident did not involve Cincinnati police. But still, there was a demonstration, a brief demonstration outside District 1. They were met with about a dozen and a half, maybe two dozen officers standing shoulder to shoulder outside the front door of District 1. One of them had a number of zip ties used as plastic handcuffs attached to his belt. So Cincinnati police were ready for trouble, even though officers did escort the procession to the front door of District 1. And just before, actually, the procession started, Chief Blackwell showed up at the Hamilton County Courthouse. He exchanged a few words with demonstrators, and that was that. While on that note, actually, when I first got there and, you know, turned around and looked and saw 200-300 people, I noticed there was one thing that was missing, a heavy police presence. I saw one officer across the street, and that was it. So I thought that was kind of interesting.
Bill, did anybody talk to you along the way about what they want to happen from here, indicting other officers, change in the UC Police Department? Did anybody mention anything about that?
A lot of people talked, and one of the continuing themes was that this is just an indictment and they want a conviction. They're not going to settle for anything less. They want a conviction. They want a guilty sentence. They want a guilty sentence. And they also want...
Do they want guilty of murder, or would they take any guilty?
No, I did not hear a lot of people excited about a plea deal or a lesser charge. They do want the other officers involved to be prosecuted as well, and they want to see more restraint from police overall.
And of course, the reason they want the other officers charged as well as Joe was saying, two prosecuted judges was saying earlier, the family was frustrated with the fact that the other officers' report agreed with.
Yes,
the other officers. Why they say they should be charged for covering up.
Yeah, they see it as a cover up. They see them as just backing one of their fellow officers, and as Joe Dieters just said, that could also be viewed. Their reports could be viewed as just Ray Tensing said he was dragged, not we saw him dragged, not we're endorsing the idea that he was dragged. The report could be taken to read he said he was dragged.
513-419-7100 to join the conversation. Let's talk with Andrew. Hi, Andrew.
Hey, how are you doing?
Good, thank you.
Well, you know, I just wanted to say my dad was a police officer. He retired shortly before I was born, but, you know, we talked about it all the time. And one thing he would say whenever we were watching cops and whatnot, he'd see these cops pull their tasers out and, you know, shoot people just for refusing to get on the ground. He'd be like, that's ridiculous. You know, I mean, all I'd ever have to do in a situation like that is, you know, is ask them a few more times. Eventually they would comply. Or if it really came down to it, he could just walk up to him with another officer and put him on the ground. There's no reason to shoot someone or tase someone in a situation like this. And in light of the recent shootings we've seen here with, you know, a lot of people actually dying because of inept officers, you know, I think we need to go back to a day where we expect our officers to talk to people more and to be a member of the community and to be somebody that people know. You know, it seems like nobody even knows any of the police officers in their town. They're just people in uniforms to them. And until we also change our laws and what we expect of our police officers to do, you know, the type of person who's attracted to being officer is, I'm not saying everyone, but it seems like, you know, a very hot-headed person nowadays is attracted to doing it. And, you know, people like myself who are more socially, you know, conscious of people, you know, I don't want to ruin someone's life for smoking a joint. You know, and, you know, until we change our laws, I think the type of person out there is going to be typically, you know, more hot-headed and inclined to do this. I'll take my comment off the air. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Andrew. Tanner or Bill, have either of you heard Chief Blackwell address what he was talking about?
Well, he mentioned officers seem to be disconnected from their communities, and there has been a movement in the last couple of years, not just in Cincinnati, but across the country, to get officers out of their cars and walking the beat. Chief Blackwell has encouraged his officers and assigned many to walk the beat, to get out of the car, to patrol on foot, to get to know people. And that's been happening for the last year or so. And if I remember correctly, his predecessor, Chief Craig, also encouraged officers to park the car, get out, talk to people, find out what's going on, build community, build relationships.
What about Chief Blackwell himself? Has anyone had any comment about how he's done in being available to the public?
He has been at many of these demonstrations. He was at the Quandavier Hicks demonstration earlier this summer. If you'll remember, Hicks was shot and killed by police after reportedly leveling a gun in their direction in the hallway of his Northside apartment. And there was a demonstration that marched up from Northside to the police headquarters there on Ludlow. And he was there at that. He was there last night. He's been at many of these demonstrations.
513-419-7100 to join the conversation. Tana, have you heard anything more about what Joe Dieters was saying about disbanding the UC Police Department? Has UC had any comment on that as far as whether they don't think it's a good idea or think it's a good idea? I mean, what have you been hearing?
UC has not commented to us on that. We don't really know. Joe Dieters hasn't said much more than what he said in the press conference yesterday, where he kind of said, you know, university should be in the business of educating, not in the business of policing. They're not good at it necessarily. You know, and UC police officers, they do receive training. They are police officers, but they don't get the extra training that Cincinnati police officers do under the collaborative agreement.
So, interesting to note also, I believe the University of Cincinnati Police Department is the third largest law enforcement agency in Hamilton County. There's the Cincinnati Police, Hamilton County Sheriff, and then UC Police. They have the third highest number of officers.
And I think what Joe Dieters said exactly was that they should become part of a sixth police district. Was that exactly what he said?
Well, his idea was that UC should just get rid of their police officers. Cincinnati Police should complete their, currently there are five districts, make the campus areas a sixth district that is patrolled by Cincinnati officers. And we should just mention, reiterate for everyone, that after the shooting, UC called their officers back onto campus. They're no longer patrolling off campus.
That whole program was started a few years ago after a rash of street crime, you know, on the streets just off campus surrounding the main campus of University of Cincinnati.
And my understanding was they were allowed to go, a mile, is it? It was a mile off campus.
It's a mile off campus.
But didn't this particular stop happen more than a mile off campus?
No, I think it was within the usual boundaries. I think the peculiarity there is the fact it was a simple traffic stop.
Tana, where do things head next? He's been arraigned. Mm-hmm. What's next?
The next court date would be August 19th. Now, whether that actually ends up being more than maybe just a conference between attorneys and the judge, that I'm not sure of. But that would be the next court date. And, of course, waiting to see if he posts bond.
513-419-7100 to join the conversation. Let's talk with Martha in Hyde Park. Hi, Martha.
Hi, I just wanted to make sure, and I think maybe when I was in the process of calling, I missed, you might have talked about this somewhat, but, you know, it's not really the Cincinnati police who did this. This was a UC officer. I really doubt that they have anywhere near as good training as the Cincinnati police. And I think we need to give the Cincinnati Police Department some credit, because since the riots in 2001, we had the collaborative agreement. And the police really have really tried to improve their community relations. We have neighborhood policing, community policing now. They have really tried to do a better job, and they have done a better job. And, in fact, they've gotten national attention for doing so much better a job. And this kid,
hey, he was only 26.
Twenty-five, yeah. I have a daughter that age. It's kind of shocking to me because. But anyway, but he also, I really doubt he was decently trained for the kind of job that a city police officer is doing. And so I just think we need to pay attention to the job that to give Cincinnati police some credit for the improvements they've made. This was not a Cincinnati policeman. And if he had been trained through their training, well, he may not have been hired by them because he may not have the suitable character to be a police officer. But also, if he'd been trained through their training program, he might have done better.
Okay. Thank you, Martha. We appreciate the call. And we will continue our conversation after this. Thank you, Tana. Thank you, Bill, both for being here.
You're welcome.
Wendell Young, Cincinnati City Councilman, will be joining us. You can join us at 513-419-7100. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Thanks. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. A Hamilton County grand jury indicted former University of Cincinnati police officer Ray Tensing for murder in the shooting death of Sam DeBose during a traffic stop on July 19th. Tensing was arraigned this morning. He pleaded not guilty, and his bond was set at $1 million. And we're looking at the events that led up to the indictment. We're getting an update, and we're exploring the possible effects the case may have had on policing, both locally and nationally. And joining us now, Cincinnati Councilmember Wendell Young. Wendell, thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
And you can join us at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Wendell, what was your reaction? You're a former police officer. What did you think with what happened in that traffic stop on July 19th?
Well, initially, I didn't think anything except it was a tragic loss of life. No. I did not try to assess blame. I realized I didn't have the facts, and I really did not know what had occurred. And so my training and my sensibility just shows me that I'd like to have a little more information before I decide how I want to feel about something. So initially, I just mourned the loss of life.
You know, caller earlier, Martha was talking about the fact that the level of training that the university police department gets versus the level of training that a full-fledged police officer would get is different. Does this just show a need, though, in general, Wendell, that we need more training for police officers, period, on the use of deadly force?
I'm not sure. First of all, I think people should understand that the university police officers are certified by the state as peace officers, so they meet or exceed the requirements that the state puts on people who want to be cops. Cincinnati police officers far above and exceed what's required by the state. I don't know whether UC just does the minimum to be certified or whether they go beyond that. My guess is that they probably go somewhere beyond that. But whether there's a need for more training or anything, I don't know at this particular point. I don't want to throw out the baby with the bathwater. We've had one UC officer allegedly do something that's really bad. I don't know that that necessarily means that every other UC officer is just like Mr. Tensing. But I do think that it is wise to do an evaluation of that department in terms of its training, in terms of the responsibilities they have, another look at the MOU between them and the city of Cincinnati. I think those are the kinds of things you want to look at. If you determine that there are deficiencies that can be fixed, I think you should fix those. If you determine that it's not in the best interest of the university or the city to have a UC police department, you should disband it. But there should not be a knee-jerk reaction that says, well, one cop did something bad, so we just do away with that whole department. And I think that Santa Ono, the president of UC, was correct yesterday when he said that you want to be careful with this notion, because policing in an urban environment and policing on a campus are not the same thing. He's absolutely right about that. And so if you have regularly trained Cincinnati police officers working on campus, it requires a different mindset in terms of what the mission is. So I think that if at all possible, we should preserve the UC Police Department and make it as good as it can possibly be, and only disband it if we determine that it's just in no one's best interest to have it.
513-419-7100 to join us, and let's talk with Terry in Northside. Hi, Terry.
Hey, how you doing?
Good, thank you. How about yourself?
Oh, pretty good. I'd like to just mention that I was at the Matter protest last night. I was also part of the march last night and in Northside. And one of the things that I wanted to bring up was the professionalism of District 5 and District 1. In both instances, they both have been amazing. Their interaction with the protesters, their interaction with demonstrators, with the march, how they assist people. You know, it's a tense situation. And I think this speaks towards the difference in the training that's given to CPD versus other, you know, other police departments. District 5 is amazing. They I know the police officers, a lot of the police officers that get out, they walk the beat, they talk to, they interact with the people on the north side. I actually know a couple of the police officers in District 1. They don't have a problem with the people in their neighborhood, and especially in an urban environment, you really need that. You need to have that trust. When you have somebody who is a UC police officer who is out, who people automatically see them outside of their jurisdiction, whether or not they are, they don't consider them in their jurisdiction when they're no place near the university. And the officer that was outside of the university, at that point in time, people are suspicious of that. And people also know that Cincinnati Police Department, that they're not going to, you know, pull you over because your license plate light is out, or because you're a little left to center of the divided line. They're not going to do that. Where these other police officers, this is something that you would find police officers doing in a suburban area or a small town or in an area that's not, you know, that
okay,
doesn't
Terry.
Have.
Let's let Wendell speak to this.
Okay. First of all, a couple things.
Thank you.
Terry, thanks for your call. I want to agree with you in terms of the professionalism of Cincinnati police officers, your experiences with District 5 and District 1, but I can tell you the Cincinnati Police Department today is far different than the one I joined years ago when I was 21 years old. And I'm the first to say that I believe our Cincinnati Police Department is a very professional department. It's loaded with very wonderful people who are absolutely dedicated to doing a good job in Cincinnati. I'm glad that Terry, and I believe many other Cincinnatians, recognize the professionalism of the department that we currently have. But I want to be careful not to disparage the UC Police Department while we're talking about how wonderful our own department is, because I'm not sure that the UC Police Department is a bad department.
And again, you make a good point. We have one officer who acted badly, did a horrible thing, but you can't condemn the whole department.
I'm not willing to do that, certainly without some investigation that would show me that you're just making terrible hiring decisions and their training is terrible, something I don't believe an investigation is going to find. But I also think it's important to understand that as wonderful as the Cincinnati Police Department is, it didn't get that way overnight. And as good as it is, it isn't perfect. We still have our issues here. But I think that by and large, the Cincinnati Police Department, I agree with Terry, very professional, absolutely dedicated to trying to do things the right way. And in spite of all that, we sometimes get it wrong. And when we do, not many people are willing to condemn the entire police department for the action of an officer who goes astray. So I just simply want to make sure that we afford UC the benefit of the doubt and be willing to work with them as opposed to condemn them.
What do you think of the way the local authorities have handled this case from the initial investigation all the way through the indictment?
I have to commend the authorities, all of them who've been involved in this, for doing what I think is a wonderful job, even though I disagreed and still disagree with Mr. Dieters about having not released the videotape. I understand why he didn't want to do it, but after having seen it, I really don't believe there would have been any real opportunity for anyone to manufacture a story that would make any kind of sense when you view what they have to say against what the tape actually shows. But I think Mr. Dieters did an outstanding job of shepherding this through the grand jury up to the point where we currently are. I think when he was speaking yesterday, he made very clear why he did what he did. And I say, even though I don't agree, I understand. I think that the Cincinnati Police Department has been wonderful throughout this. I think the city administration has done a wonderful job of being cooperative and doing everything that we can. The only criticism I offer is that it appeared to me that we were trying to bait people into misbehaving. And I think it's really important that the people who are demonstrating be given kudos for being peaceful, for being respectful. They've been loud. That's what demonstrations are. But they've never tried to exhort anyone to violence. They've been, I think, abundantly careful to make certain that they want to have peaceful protests, but they want to make their points and they want to be heard. Again, I speak about Cincinnati police. I think they've been wonderful in their interactions with them. And I think Chief Blackwell deserves an awful lot of credit for his high visibility throughout these difficult times, not only through this incident, but throughout his entire tenure. But I think the goodwill that he's been able to build up has paid huge dividends in terms of what we see going on in this city around these demonstrations. And so I think everyone that I know has been involved really needs to be commended.
513-419-7100 to join the conversation. And let's speak with Chris in Clifton. Hi, Chris.
Hey, how you doing today?
Good, thank you.
Thanks for having me on. So I live in Clifton. I live within, if I walk down to the end of my street and I look down, I can actually see the UC campus. This is something that's very near and dear to me. I live in Clifton. I love Clifton. I'm a UC grad. Mm-hmm. And I just wanted to take a moment and, you know, in my opinion, it is the duty of anybody who would consider themselves to be a leader or a person of authority to practice peace instead of escalation. And that stems from police officers on the street all the way up through to anybody who is in city, state, or national government. Peace is always the way to go instead of escalation. And
sure,
I want to commend the city officials, especially during that press conference, for striking such an incredibly balanced and peaceful tone and resisting the urge to run the risk of falling into any sort of inflammatory language. I was thinking a lot about some of the language that was used during the press conference when the prosecutor in Ferguson gave his speech after the when Ferguson was starting to ramp up. And some of the language that he used was very problematic or perceived that way. And I think that the Cincinnati officials, everyone who was up there on that stage behind that podium, really struck the perfect kind of tone that they needed to in this situation.
Okay.
I think that that's important.
Thank you, Chris. We appreciate it. Wendell, did you want to comment on what Chris had to say?
Well, no, not actually.
For the most part, I agree with him. Yeah.
There were some statements made by some people that I did not appreciate. Mm-hmm. But again, I think the demonstrators did not fall for that. And what we ended up with was what I thought we would have, peaceful demonstrations. And I agree, peace is the way to go. I think peace is what we all want. Violence doesn't accomplish anything. And of course, the story would then have been all about the violence and not about what got us here. So I agree with him. Thank him for his call.
Yeah. Do you think that the lessons from what happened in places like Ferguson and Baltimore, did that help shape Cincinnati's reaction to this?
Probably. I'd like to think we're intelligent enough to learn from other people's mistakes. I think that, you know, we've made enough of our own mistakes that combined with those, we are where we are today, which is, I think, is in a much, much better place. But, you know, I think you just cannot ignore the fact that overall the city that I've lived in all my life and call home and love dearly has really shown itself to be a class act over the last few weeks. We're just blessed with good people who have good intentions, and I really think that it's wonderful the way people have come together to address this situation. Unfortunately, it's just a tragedy all the way around. Ray Tensing, obviously, is a young guy who, I guess in a moment of whatever it was, lapse of judgment, anger, whatever happened, he did something really terrible. And we all have to live with that. But there's no undoing what happened here. So the DeBose family has a loss that could never be replaced. Tensing's lost a career he's wanted ever since he was a child. I doubt that he got up that morning thinking to himself he wanted to kill somebody. But that's allegedly what's happened, and he'll have to deal with that. But it's a tragedy. He can't undo anything he has done. I think it's incumbent upon all of us to do everything we can to make certain that we do everything we can to make sure this just doesn't happen again.
What do you think of the way that Sam DeBose's family has reacted to this?
They are truly a class act. I had an opportunity to speak with the mother at the funeral. And I can just tell you that her and watching the rest of the family and the way that they have reacted, I don't know a lot of people who I think could show the same class and dignity that these people have shown. And for those individuals who want to disparage Sam DeBose because of his record and so forth, I think it's also important to understand that nothing he did, whether you think he was a good person or not, nothing he did, nothing he said should have resulted in him being dead. So I think that that's just the tragedy in this whole thing. And it's something that happens too often in this country. And thank God for the video, because I think without that, we'd be having a very different conversation today.
513-419-7100 to join us. And let's talk with Sarah in Middletown. Hi, Sarah.
Hi. Well, I live in Middletown, but I work in downtown Cincinnati, and I have for 10 years. I moved here right after the riots in 2001, and you know, with this coming down, my husband was actually kind of concerned, and I was considering calling off work because I didn't want to be downtown. But I'm very, very proud of what I consider to be my home. I'm very proud of my city. And the majority of the people I've talked to on the bus, it's, you know what, we want peace. We don't want violence. So I just like to say, Cincinnati, I'm proud to call you home.
Sarah, that's two of us. Thank you.
Yeah, that's a good comment. Are you finding that most people you talk to, this is the way they're reacting?
Most people I've talked to are very, very proud of our city, and they're very proud of the way we've reacted. And most of the people I've talked with just abhor the entire situation. They see it as a tragedy on all sides. Everybody wishes it had not happened, but they're very satisfied with the way the city has responded.
513-419-7100 to join us, and let's talk with Jimmy in Norwood. Hi, Jimmy.
Hi, you have a very engaging show. Thank you for taking my call. And your guest, Wendell Young, is a very erudite gentleman, and I appreciate the opportunity to call in.
Well, thank you. Compliments will get you everywhere.
Compliments all the way around. We like that.
What I wanted to say real briefly is that, to a very large extent, I agree with what Wendell was saying about how not every police officer in Cincinnati or at the university is represented by Officer Tensing's actions. But at the same time, there are still some officers who have killed people who are walking the streets. And I'm sure you heard a couple of weeks ago, there was a cover-up and a story about an officer who was hammered, and he was downtown with a prostitute and some drugs, and it had come out that he had also killed a fellow in Northside. And that officer's name was Andrew Mitchell, and the fellow in Northside that he killed has a lot of friends who had been saying, "I told you so," ever since. That officer got off at the time that he killed the fellow in Northside, and now it's
he was acquitted
out.
By a court, is what you're saying.
Yeah, and it was too bad because nobody believed him in the first place. And if there had been a camera on his lapel, like there was with Mr. Tensing, I'm sure that the acquittal may have come out much differently.
Okay.
So if anybody's paying attention, I certainly hope that this Andrew Mitchell no longer walks the street with a weapon, either as a policeman or as a just a civilian.
And that's your opinion, Jim. Thank you for the call. We appreciate it. Wendell, what?
Well, obviously, I can't speak to what he says.
Yeah.
I know the incident he's talking about, and again, it was very unfortunate. But one thing I will agree with him on, I am a huge proponent of body cameras for police officers. And I've met a lot of converts over the last week or so, people who weren't really sure, kind of sitting on the fence. And my belief is that this city council is going to make a very strong push to expedite the use of body cameras in the city of Cincinnati. We've been told that we're going to get them, but we're concerned about the cost, and we're concerned about how we're going to store the information that we get. Those are valid concerns. However, other police departments have found a way to do this, and I think that Cincinnati can do the same thing. But one thing I am certain of, if we have body cameras, they will go a long way toward helping to buttress the credibility of police officers.
Yeah, I think I've heard that body cameras actually exonerate more often than they implicate.
I think they
this
will.
Was a very rare case.
The vast number of cops do what they're supposed to do, and a body camera, I think, will validate that. And for those individuals who are doing things that they should not be doing, the body camera will probably help us to eliminate them from our police department. But I think that what they really do is, in those situations where it's just the officer and just the person being accused, the body camera would be very, very useful. So I think they could be lifesavers. But obviously, in this particular case, we have seen what happened. And most of us speculate that without that body camera, we'd be having a very different conversation about what happened.
Oh, as one of our callers said earlier, a long time ago, you took the word of the police officer.
You did. And I think in many cases, you still do. But that's because, you know, officers take the oath to uphold the law. Most of them do that. But, you know, when you have over 1,000 people on a job, you just cannot realistically believe that everybody's going to be truthful all the time. So the body camera helps. And again, like I say, you've been in those situations where it's just you and the other person. The body camera would be just a wonderful tool to have on your belt that shows people you did the right thing.
513-419-7100 to join us, and let's talk with Larry in downtown. Hi, Larry. Larry, are you there? Okay, let's move on to Blair in Clifton. Hi, Blair.
Hi, Hi. I live in Clifton. I'm not a student. I'm not associated with the university in any way. I have seen UC police in the neighborhood, and I always assumed that they were helping students. I don't think I would have thought it was legitimate for them to pull me over for anything. So I wanted to ask about that agreement between the city and UC that, you know, until very recently was allowing them to patrol and work in the city limits outside of the university limits. Did when we made that agreement with UC, did they have to follow the same training and rules that came up after the 2001 shooting and riots under the collaborative agreement?
My understanding is no. I assumed, one should never do that anymore, but I assumed that the UC police officers who were being permitted by virtue of the agreement between them and the city of Cincinnati to patrol the Cincinnati streets were doing that in an effort to ensure the safety of UC students. It never occurred to me that they would be making traffic stops. However, the agreement permits them to do that, remembering, of course, that they are police officers. And the agreement permitted them to make traffic stops and do traffic enforcement. I think that if there's another agreement, you're going to see that portion eliminated. My belief is that they should be permitted to patrol the streets near the university, but only to make certain that students or people who appear to be students are safe. My other belief is that they should respond to any crime in progress that they see. For example, if they see someone being assaulted, if they see a robbery occurring, a rape, a burglary, that sort of thing, I think they should be able to respond to those. But anything that's minor, I think that they should ignore. If it's minor but they think it needs attention, I think they should call the police and call Cincinnati police and let them handle that. But I think that that agreement needs to really, really, really be reworked, and they should not be back on Cincinnati streets until the city and the university have a very clear understanding of what those duties ought to be. I think they should be confined to a specific area, not allowed to roam outside of that area. But I think there's value in having them on the streets to help protect the people there. But I just think we need to really shore up what that's supposed to look like, what they're supposed to be doing.
Now, Sue in Hyde Park had a question for us. She was concerned about changing the police culture of covering for each other. And again, as a former police officer, what are your thoughts on that, Wendell?
I don't believe that's ever going to change. Even though there are memorandums of understanding between the city of Cincinnati and the surrounding departments, knowing cops as I do, if another cop is really in danger, you probably are going to ignore anybody's rule and go to the aid of that officer. That's just the way cops are wired. We're going to protect each other. We know that we're going to do that. The memorandum of understanding between the cities, though, is extremely helpful because if an officer is injured while trying to help someone in another jurisdiction, all the benefits that they accrue will still protect them. So if they got hurt, they're still going to have their medical protection. If they get sued, they're still going to have their legal protection and so forth. So it's important to have those agreements, and I think we will always have those. But police officers are the kind of people that, even if they personally don't like each other, they're going to protect each other because they realize on the street many times each other is all they have. And so it's just sort of an unwritten agreement, an unwritten code, if you will. Police officers will protect each other. We all know that. And that's something I believe will never change.
Well, Wendell, last question. What's next for police community relations in Cincinnati? Is council going to form a committee to look at these issues in the light of this?
I don't think, you know, people need to make sure they understand this really is not a Cincinnati police issue. It's not a city of Cincinnati issue. The incident occurred on Cincinnati Street, but it was a University of Cincinnati police officer, and it's really their issue. It is because of where it happened, an issue that we need to look at and pay attention to. But this does not say anything about the Cincinnati Police Department. It's not a Cincinnati police officer involved. It's not a matter of Cincinnati Police Department training. It is a matter of where the city of Cincinnati possibly can help the university to improve its department. And I know we'd be more than willing to do that if that's something we can do. I'm pleased that Santa Ono is willing to look at the collaborative agreement and incorporate that into what he does. I think that's a huge leap forward. But I also think that going forward, the key thing here is to maintain the cooperation between the agencies, to help them be more professional if that's something we could help them do. I think Santa Ono is correct. We want to put together a committee of some sort to look at his department. I'd be more than happy to help with that. But I think at the end of the day, we all want everything there to be fine.
Wendell, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Cincinnati Councilmember Wendell Young. Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Archives of our program are available at WVXU.org. The producer for today's show was Pete Reitmeier. The technical director was Kevin Rawinski. I'm Mark Haney. Stay tuned for Here and Now, next on 91.7 WVXU. Summer is when most of us take a break, but that doesn't hold true for criminals looking to relieve you of your hard-earned money. On the next Cincinnati Edition, we'll take a look at the latest schemes con artists are using and how to guard against them. We'll also discuss preparing to meet the needs of our dramatically increasing elder population, those aged 65 and older. That's on Cincinnati Edition, Friday afternoon at 1 on 91.7 WVXU.